Warning! This program will contain massive spoilers and profanity for absolutely everything we discuss. Consider yourself warned. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Chilling Amongst the Mangoes, the stickiest review show on the internet. I'm CJ Welker.
I'm Gage Topolsky, and we're coming back to the 90s disaster movie November with Deep Impact. A movie that I've seen a couple times.
I have never seen it until this morning.
Okay. I realized while rewatching while sober, the reason it tugged at so many of my heartstrings was I was mildly drunk over the course of the wedding.
Oh no, so, I will be straight up honest. I cried like three times during this movie.
I was
tears rolling down my cheeks.
Like, no, there was one moment at the very end where I was like, oh, God. Like it was. Yeah, no, it really knows how to, like, play the characters. I wish we saw more of them, but yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I have very, very mixed feelings on this movie.
Mm.
Plot is fine, generally. It's whatever. It's meteors. Comet.
Yeah, no, I had to change. Yeah. I had to change my notes so many times.
Well, because it's so close to Armageddon.
Yeah,
They came out the same year.
Yeah,
yeah. They literally had to edit out a line in the movie when they learned that a movie called Armageddon with the same plot was coming out the same year. Morgan Freeman initially said, "Life will go on. We will survive. This is not Armageddon."
Oh.
And they had to edit that out of the final cut. plot's fine. Characters are fine.
Yeah.
Though, one thing this movie does extremely well is make the emotional moments fucking hit.
Yes.
But I think that's the only thing it does well. Though I will say, for a movie that came out in 1998, there was only one or two times that I thought any of the visuals looked off.
Yeah, no, the visuals...
They were spectacular. Heck,
they were very good. Yeah.
Like, there was one little, CGI shot during, like, the disaster at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
I'm just going to talk about this now.
Yeah.
There was one that looked little janky.
Was it the Statue of Liberty's head floating?
No, I thought that was passable.
Okay.
I definitely see where you're coming from. No, there was one, and I can't remember if it was in D.C. or New York or something like that. But there was a guy on a bench that, like, ran.
I mean, we saw a lot of people running.
Yeah, no, but there was a guy that was on a bench, turned around, was like, oh shit, ran. And the water looked like it was just a solid object moving, like, forward instead of, like, rolling water sim. But it was at such a big scale.
Right.
For, like, going through a city. I'm willing to give it a pass because everything else looked fine.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But... I just get that out of the way now. I think for the most part, everything looks amazing in this movie. They did a great job with that.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get into the cast list real quick.
Yes.
So
this was star-studded.
It was.
Yeah.
This was directed by Mimi Leder. Leder?
I don't know.
Leder. Starring Robert Duvall as Commander Spurgeon Tanner, or Fish.
Mm-hmm.
Is it Tay or Taya, Leone? I think it's Tay. I think it's pronounced Tay.
The accent over the E.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure I've heard it pronounced
I think it's Tay. Yeah, I think it's Tay.
Tay Leone. Either way, it's Tay.
Yeah.
Leone as Jenny Lerner. Elijah Wood as Leo Biederman. Morgan Freeman as President Beck. And there's a few others as well.
Yeah.
Jon Favreau as
Gus,
young and fit, and it threw me off for a minute because I'm like, shit, he was kind of hot.
the producer's chair is very comfortable.
Yes, I can imagine. Hey, you fucking make the first Iron Man, you can do whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah. Yeah. What I do think is interesting about Deep Impact, the trailer has, not the trailer, the poster for the impact is showing, it doesn't look like it's hitting the ocean. It looks like it's hitting land and causing a crater, but that's just a minor nitpick. Want to dive into it?
Yeah, let's dive into it.
The movie opens with a very young Elijah Wood as Leo discovering a new celestial body. His teacher, unsure of what it is, decides to send the photo and coordinates to a scientist in an actual observatory who identifies it as a new comet. Despite having only using 1998 computing, he is able to determine that the comet will most likely collide with Earth, and what this movie does, and what we don't see that often, especially in these disaster movies, is it shows he doesn't say a damn word while he's figuring this out. It's told through his acting and the music
and the facial expressions.
And just like this, like, very early CGI model of a dot coming to hit a bigger dot. Rare experience on this podcast for older movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Email is down, so he has to download all the information onto a floppy disk. This was back in the time period where a floppy disk could hold a virus that would destroy the world. It happened a lot. That was the plot of a lot of movies.
I'm aware. I'm aware. You don't have to mansplain floppy disk viruses to me. Thank you very much.
And he decides to hand deliver it to someone. He hops in his Jeep, and the camera cuts back and forth between him and a semi heading in the opposite direction. They crash, and he rolls off the side of the cliff, and there's this big ball of fire, and you can see this happening like a mile ahead, but the tension's done well enough, and it's an impressive stunt.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. It blew up too well, though.
It did. It was, the fireball was too clean.
Yeah. Little bit of fire, fine. Big explosive fireball. It's like, meh.
Yeah. Yeah. 1 year later, we cut to a news office and we meet Jenny, a news journalist who is trying to get a leg up in her profession. We learned that through her mother that her dad has remarried a girl who is 2 years younger than she is. She decides to follow up on some leads with the Secretary of the Treasury to find out the real reason why he stepped down from his post. And going off of a lead by one of his disgruntled ex-employees, she believes that he is stepping down because of an affair with a woman named Ellie. She then goes to the Secretary of the Treasury and plays the part of the vague, potentially sinister reporter. And like in any other movie, she would be the bad guy if the, like, yeah. Yeah.
There is one line that I do like here where, what was his name? Like Rittenhouse? Or
Rittenhouse,
something?
Yeah.
Says, I know, you're just a reporter. But didn't you used to be a person?
Yeah.
I like that line. That's funny.
That's a good one. He doesn't confirm anything about Ellie, but, he basically says a little bit overdramatically that this, don't, please just leave it alone.
Yeah, this is like the biggest, like, congratulations, you just dropped the biggest story in history.
Yeah. And then she's driving back, to Washington, talking to herself on a, what do you call those, personal recorders?
Yeah, it's just a recorder.
Yeah. And she's like, wait a minute, why is this the biggest... she starts speculating.
Yeah, she's like, oh, he's not having an affair. He's covering up for the president having an affair by pretending to have an affair of his own. Yeah. And immediately gets rear-ended by FBI.
she gets pit maneuvered by three cars.
She wasn't pit maneuvered.
No, well, isn't that, what do you call that then? If it's a
she
three
was boxed
car,
in.
Boxed in, that's it.
A pit maneuver is where
one car go. Yeah, no,
like
no.
Hits the rear fender where one of the wheels are for the... the car ahead of it, and it like turns and spins out. That's a pit maneuver.
Got it. So FBI pick her up, bring her to a unnamed location that looks like the restaurant kitchen, where she meets famous character actor of God and Presidents Morgan Freeman, here portraying a president.
Shot in the kitchen of the hotel where Bobby Kennedy was assassinated.
Seriously?
Yeah, the Ambassador Hotel.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting. President asks, what do you know about ELE? Yes, I watched with subtitles too, because yeah. I think when I watched, well, slightly drunk, I just heard Ellie. ELE is an acronym. At this point, Jenny gets the sense that this is something bigger than what she expects to be going on. And she notices that around this kitchen are the same packaged foodstuffs mm-hmm. that the treasurer was loading onto his boat.
Yeah. And so President Beck negotiates with her to hold the story for 48 hours.
Yeah.
And that she'd get a front center seat at the press conference.
And first question.
And first question. Well...
Oh, no, I love that scene. That was like, you don't often get to see Morgan Freeman be scary president.
No, but that's the thing. All in this movie, I find him to be, like, his character is great.
Yes.
I love his portrayal of a president doing whatever he can to...
Yeah.
Like, granted, this is still the 90s, so benefit of the doubt is allowed
yeah.
for the time, but he was a president with transparency. He straight up told people what was happening.
Yeah.
Don't worry, it's going to be great. You're going to love it. Stop. Everyone's going to die.
So the one line that I love is like, he tells her how this is going to work. And then she says, I want first question. And he goes and like, excuse me.
Yeah.
And she's like, Can I have first question?
She starts to say, I want, and he looks, you want? She's like, may I have first question?
just like a throwback to elementary school.
Yeah.
talking to the teacher.
I want to go potty.
Do you want or do you need? Go. Anyway.
Ah, somebody get that janitor.
So, she leaves and she decides to go Google what ELE mean. Wait, Google didn't exist yet. MSNBC search functioning?
Let's go with that.
Yeah, ELE, and she finds that it's shorthand for extinction level event.
No, it takes her a little bit to get there.
It takes a little bit. She barely has a moment to process any of this before having to go meet with her father and new stepmother. They give her a pair of pearl earrings, and Jenny tries to drink away her concerns, but she breaks into laughter after her father says, life goes on. Life goes on.
yeah. You'll see in 48 hours that ain't the fucking case, man.
Who was playing the father? Was that
His name was Maximilian. Give me one second. I had it up here a second ago. Maximilian Schell.
He's been in a lot of things.
He has.
Oh, he was in. The lead in Judgment at Nuremberg.
I don't know if I ever saw that.
It's depressing as hell.
I mean, I can imagine.
Oh, that's where I recognize him from. He was the Diamond Dog in The Brothers Bloom.
Oh, he
closest thing
died
to a
in
villain.
2014.
Oh, that's a shame.
Well, he was born in 30.
Oh, I mean, I guess that makes sense. Yeah, now this guy has an impressive resume. Mostly in German film, but a fair amount in American movies as well. All right.
Born in Austria, raised in Zurich, Switzerland. Cool.
So next day, White House, the president announces the big news. There's a comet the size of New York and the volume of Mount Everest heading directly to Earth. Leo is watching this with his parents. The president announces that the U.S. has been working with Russia to build this. That made me sad about our current space station situation.
Yeah.
Right now, I'm really happy about the Artemis mission. We're going back to the moon. That's awesome. We're going to get into a space race with China. That's so cool. But if we're in a space race with China, then we can't work with China to reach space, which is, like, not what we need right now. Especially when it comes to space.
We need to work together.
Anyway.
Is there a Barney song about that?
I think so. It's a weird poll, CJ. they're sending...
Oh, no, I was thinking of the fun song from SpongeBob. F is for friends who do stuff together. Okay, never mind.
So, they're going to send 5 Americans and 1 Russian onto the biggest spaceship they've ever created in an attempt to blow up the comet. I've had to stop myself from calling it literally any other celestial body.
Yeah.
I know it's kind of been melded into our brains as a culture that meteorites are the ones that hit and do the most damage. Yeah. And it's important to know that comets can also do a lot of damage if they hit a planet.
Yeah, but it's been so just, like beaten into us.
Yeah.
Fucking Hollywood. Fucking Armageddon.
So, they're going to launch, they're going to drill a hole into it, put a nuke in there, make it blow up, and hopefully shatter the asteroid. Comet, goddammit! In an attempt to reduce hoarding and economic turmoil, the president has frozen all prices on essentials. Jenny takes the first 3 questions, mostly still shocked that this wasn't about...
Oh yeah, so obviously, not Republican.
Mm.
I'm sorry, anytime Morgan Freeman plays a president, or any kind of political figure, I have to look at his character and be like, okay, but what side?
Whenever he plays a president, I like to imagine that he is the first independent president since Washington to become president.
Yeah.
But that's just like, just optimism on my end.
I want to see one where it's just like, oh no, he's just... He's Green Party president.
All right. So, President, she takes the questions first. She asks the president about the name of the comet. It has been named Wolf Biederman. We cut to Leo and his family surrounded in their home, and people come to his house, including the girl he's interested in. Next day, he has a press God,
it's a high school assembly where
you questions to an amateur astronomer.
There you go.
Thank you. That he doesn't exactly have the questions to, but luckily these are these are middle schoolers who don't have the right questions to ask him.
They're high schoolers.
High schoolers, fine. One of them asks, what does it feel like? And he says, it's kind of weird. And then another one says, I bet you're going to have a lot worse sex, man. And the camera sticks on him for a whole minute.
So that was all improv'd on that kid's part.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that, like... As soon as he stood up, he was supposed to have a different line, but he improv'd the whole sex thing, and then they just left that in, let the whole thing go. That fully tracks for a high school. Especially because, like, he had acne I'm like, okay, this kid's like freshman or sophomore, he's 100%.
The audience is now introduced to some of the astronauts going up to deal with the comet. They're all dressed very much like it's the 1960s and are having a very much 1960s-esque party. Like it.
You never went to a block party.
No, I guess not.
No.
Like
no,
I,
that's
I mean,
like late 90s, early aughts. Mm. Like that was the neighborhood I grew up in. Like just every weekend.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
No, it fully is on brand.
Okay. Huh. I guess I grew up closer. I grew up closer to the city, so we didn't have block parties like that.
Granted, they weren't like block parties. It was the couple of houses in our neighborhood that was like right next to each other.
Uh-huh.
All of our parents were good friends. They had like a weekly bonfire during the summer.
Okay,
it was very reminiscent of this.
Watching this reminded me of that drama, Astronaut Wives. I can't remember what it was called. It was about the wives and families of the astronauts when they were going up to the moon back during the 60s.
Okay.
Yeah, it was good.
Take your word for it.
But, like, it's... I guess I'll take your word for the block party aesthetic.
Yeah, no, it tracks. It totally tracks. Especially the Jon Favreau trying to basically explain to a 7-year-old how dangerous the doing this is, as if he's going to make things better. Ironically, talking about the exact thing that kills his character later.
Yeah. Yeah, all the scenes of the astronauts are very cute and telling that they're all going to die because they're all happy and have plans for the future.
Mm-hmm.
So what we learn mainly is that there's a generational gap between the astronauts. All of them except for all of them are 20, young 20 to 30 somethings. And there's one older guy who was one of the last people to set foot on the moon. He's coming out of retirement as he's the only one experienced with landing on an alien body.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, sorry, I left a note, like when I wrote that landing on an alien body, I left a note that says leave
too
beat,
easy.
Leave too beat for CJ to quip. All right.
It's too easy. Here's the thing. I wasn't going to say anything, but the fact that you paused on it is actually making me question whether or not I should.
I don't know if you should or not. I just planned to expect it. You know?
Let's carry on before I actually go off on that.
All right, they go to the space station. They hop on a shuttle. They get up to the new giant ship called the Messiah, which is weird. I hate, so many... Typically, mythology, when you call a spaceship something, you name it after a person or a mythology or an entity from mythology.
Is the Bible not Christian mythology?
Yes, but typically we go, at least the Americans go with Greek and Roman.
Yeah.
And it's just like, that's a little weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm probably going to get hate from somebody for calling the Bible Christian mythology.
Whatever. But. They know what we are. They know where we're at. Anyway, they get up.
No more gods. No more gods.
They get up to the spaceship, and it cuts to 5 months later, and it's a blink and you miss it kind of time skip.
So, yeah, this movie has weird pacing.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's not bad.
No,
it doesn't feel slow. It doesn't feel too quick. But the time jumps are sporadic and random and. Like, a little jarring.
Yeah.
And, I mean, literally, they had, I think 2 characters who were pregnant, and then to show that time had passed, they just had a newborn in the next scene that they were in.
Yeah.
So it's
it's not bad, it's just, you're not used to it.
Yeah, and here's the thing, I don't think anything about this movie is necessarily bad, I just think a lot of it is just kind of fine.
Mm.
But there's a lot of things, emotional beats.
Yes.
That hit so fucking hard that I don't care.
Yeah. Now, I love the way that the emotional beats build up over the course of the movie. There's these tiny little moments that don't seem impactful, but...
All the character moments from the beginning end up paying off something.
Yes.
Somewhere at the end in an extremely impactful and meaningful way.
Mm-hmm.
Considering the rest of the movie is kind of just meh.
Yeah.
The fact that they were able to do that is kind of impressive.
No, it is. It really is.
I had no idea when you said that that you were going to feel things and that I was probably going to feel things, exactly what that meant. And I understand now. That's really the only thing about this movie that I give a shit about. Is the feels.
Yeah. We see Jenny still being ignored by her bosses, this time because she held back on a story. The astronauts load a nuke and prepare to launch it.
No, she's not being ignored by them. She gets promoted.
She gets promoted, but, she doesn't get to the position that she actually... She was, annoyed by it for some reason. I'm not sure exactly.
I wasn't too sure about her character for most of the movie.
Yeah. I wish there was more with the father.
Yeah, because the father stuff kind of seemed shoved in there.
Yeah, but it worked well at the end, though. That's what I mean. I wish there was more of the father.
Yeah, if there was more of the father... Here's the thing. I feel like because they had so many other, characters and side characters and everything that they had to do payoffs for, they should have had either the mother or the father, not both.
Yeah.
Because the way that it was, we ended up devoting, two scenes to... two scenes with the mother that could have been with the father, or vice versa.
Right. Yeah. No, I agree.
So it's like, because if they had done it a little bit differently, and the mother dying, the mother dying was the big emotional payoff, and then at the end she still goes to that beach.
Yeah, or they leaned more into the fact that the mother dying was the big moment where they had to come back together, and not just because of a responsibility to meet the new.
I don't know. It just that her character is the one character with the emotional payoff that doesn't quite work for me.
It doesn't hit as it works for me. It just doesn't hit as hard as the other beats.
The other one, but that's because the other ones hit so fucking hard.
Yeah,
and that's the thing. If there was actually a main protagonist that we were following instead of a couple different groups of people spread out throughout, space and then America, it would have worked if they, but they didn't dedicate it quite enough time.
I agree with you. So the astronauts load the nuke, prepare to launch it. I noticed that the Russian has his own Russian alphabet keyboard.
Yep, Cyrillic.
It's Cyrillic, but that's not exactly standard for spacecraft. Essentially, when the Americans were the one who built it,
they wanted to be accommodating. The Cold War had just ended.
I get. Okay, that's fair. The astronauts launch their landing craft into the tail of the comet as the people of Earth watch. They make it through the coma, grapple to the dark side of the asteroid. I do love that this movie... Comet, fuck.
You know what I should do in editing? I should go in and every time one of us says the wrong version, I should just ding.
Please don't. Ding. That's only going to annoy our listeners. Anyway, which I do love that the way that they land is kind of the same way that they landed that probe on. Yeah, it's pretty much the same. The special effects here on the surface of the comet are pretty good. As they dig into the material of the surface, material floats up in a way as it would in a case of microgravity. That's what I'm saying.
There hasn't been a ton of special effects up until this point.
Yeah.
And then they get to the comet, and I'm like, holy shit, this was made in the late 90s?
The landscape is really cool. It's just,
This looks better than The Matrix and The Phantom Menace, which are the two staple movies from the late 90s with generally regarded good CGI.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
I know. I would love to see the set for this.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
And then the coma itself the shot.
Yeah. They drill down, but the drill gets stuck in a cave, so one of the astronauts has to go down and give it a kick. They get it moving again. Oh, they're on a timer, by the way. They landed on the dark side of the asteroid. The asteroid takes 7 hours to rotate all the way around.
On its axis.
On its axis.
So they're trying to do this before the sun comes up, because when the sun comes up, first of all, they have to, radiation is a problem.
Yep. And even more of a problem, as the surface of the meteor evaporates in the sun. Yeah, and
heats up with the sunlight. Gases escape, and kind of get a little explodey.
Yeah. Drill gets stuck. They go down, give it a kick. They get it moving again, and the digger and the nuke are well on their way. Sun starts to rise, and the surface starts exploding blasts of gas. One of these jets knocks Jon Favreau out into space, and only three of them make it back to the ship. The pilot makes his way back, but his sun shield wasn't down when the sun hit, and he stared. He looked directly into the sun with no protection, suffering third-degree burns across his entire face and blindness. Your cats, man.
Fucking monsters. Absolute monsters. I'm pretty sure Percy just yeeted himself from my toaster oven on top of the cupboards again.
They fly away. They detonate the nuke, but for some dumb reason, they are still within the vicinity of the blast.
Yeah, they didn't take their time with that.
Yeah.
I don't quite get.
I don't know. Yeah. You see everyone around the United States being very quiet and concerned, waiting for information.
This is another thing that they do well, is building the tension of what the fuck is happening.
Yes, yeah.
Because, okay, in a very similar and yet completely different way that Volcano did a bunch of, like, newsreel stuff and newscaster stuff, this movie does it flawlessly because actually as Jenny, as the new MSNBC.
Yeah.
News anchor. Wow. like actually like doing like a live commentary, play by play, explaining to the public what's going on.
Right.
So footage in the background.
So we have a main character espousing dialogue.
Yes, exactly. So it works.
Yeah.
And it actually is because the part of the movie focuses on telling the American public what's happening and the full transparency thing, which you wouldn't get in a movie today.
Yeah.
But anyway, so the when the shuttle gets knocked or detonates the nukes, they had planned for the screens to go out. So there's just static on the screens. They're like, okay, we're just waiting for things to come back. And then it doesn't. And so in between cuts of the astronauts, like, trying to seal, like, a pressure door and everything, and just, like, all hell breaking loose in the Messiah, we just cut back and forth to people staring in horror at the TV screens that are not coming back with an image.
Yeah. The president hops on air and tells everyone the bad news again. The bomb did explode the comet. It did not divert the path. Something that could have easily been accomplished by having the bomb placed at the center of the damn thing.
Yeah.
Like, they could have just attached it to the side. Like, yeah.
Again, like, the good part of this movie is the emotional character-driven stuff.
Yeah, it's not the science.
It's not the science, it's not even the plot, because the plot is, by today's standards, kind of
meh
and generic. But
yeah.
I cannot stress enough how weird it is that this movie has such amazing character-driven
moments. It does. It really does. Anyway, the... I caught myself there. The comet is now broken into two pieces, and both pieces are heading to Earth. Their backup plan now is to throw nukes at it until it stops coming at Earth. However, this plan only works if the nukes are fired close enough to the comet. They have to wait until the last couple of hours before it is due to hit. But just as a backup to the backup plan of nuke the fucker, the U.S. has dug out a large cavern of cave networks in limestone in Missouri. They've chosen 20,000 scientists and doctors and people necessary for rebuilding the nation, but will have a computer-aided lottery system allowing another 800,000 random people safe harbor, with enough food to feed all 1 million people for 2 years until the dust settles and they can come out and rebuild. And I was like, I don't know if 2 years is enough time. Like, it's like verging on enough time.
Basically, they built fallout shelters.
Yeah.
For like a 2 year at least thing. Yeah. With literally they did a whole Noah's Ark with two of each animal, seeds, like greenery, stuff like that.
President even says other countries are doing similar things.
Yeah.
We're not gonna help. We gotta focus on ourselves.
Yeah.
So can't wait for World War III, the moment that caves open up. The president offers a prayer for the nation, and I kind of really like this line. I believe that God, whoever you hold that to be, hears all prayers, even if the answer is sometimes no.
Yeah.
I really like.
I also like that he addressed, I believe in God. I know a lot of you don't.
Yeah.
Either way, I would like to, do. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
He's being respectful about it, and I enjoy that. I will say that, like, I love when, like, you can tell, like, okay, president's reading from a script or a teleprompter or something, and all of a sudden, like, you can tell they say, he's like, I wish. No,
that's the wrong
word. No, that's not the right word to use right now.
Yeah.
And it just, I don't know why, that little fucking, like...
It's fucking Morgan Freeman, man.
No, I know, yeah,
but... no, I know what you're saying, too. Like,
it's like, I don't... It's Morgan Freeman, and he's an amazing actor.
Yeah.
This is known. But why that little just, like, stumble over words hit so hard?
I think it's because it's the most human we've seen him. All this time, we've seen him being, like, all presidential and all, like, important. But that moment where he, like, even questions himself is just, like, this very human moment.
How is this movie... like, hitting so hard with character moments.
It's good. It's very good.
I cannot... I cannot deal with it.
The prayer functions as both an actual and literal midpoint of the movie. Like, I paused, it's, like, right in the middle. And this only typically happens with a very strict narrative structure. Which, it makes sense. This is might be the poster child for a five-act structure. This midpoint also represents a key moment in the film, shifting from its generic "let's save the world" political action into more character interaction. Yeah. We see a little bit of the character piece and character study happen in the first half.
See the setup for it in the first half. The back half of this movie is where hell basically breaks loose and people are like actually like.
Dealing with this.
Yeah, dealing with the fallout of what they expect to happen.
Yeah. After the president finishes talking, Jenny explains how the lottery system will work, that some people have been pre-selected, the 200,000, and some of these 200,000 people will be over the age of 50 that have been selected for their specification in a particular field.
And expertise and stuff like that.
Yep. But all other people over the age of 50 will not be included for the lottery. And I'm like, oh my God.
It's harsh, but it makes sense.
It's harsh, but it makes sense. And I don't think I've ever seen any movie that does, like, we need the survivors to live.
Yeah.
Like, actually...
thrive, and be able to...
Like, women, the old and the children first means being saved off the boat first means that all you're going to have a society of young adults and the infirmed.
Yeah.
And that's not a good plan for the future.
Right.
Yeah.
No, they did that very well. Because it is, like, visceral. You feel it. You're like, oh, that's rough. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
Yeah. Being that he was the one who discovered the asteroid, Leo and his family have been pre-selected. Kind of unfair, in my opinion. And his family represent five spots, which could be... No, four spots. Sorry, I was thinking of the other... His girlfriend's family, who has the baby. Four spots of...
There are also only four.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which could be going to people with much more significant knowledge and experiences... on the damaged spaceship, they decide to go home. Jenny talks to her mother. Her mother is taking the end of the world pretty well, but Jenny is dealing with the fact that she was given a spot in the caves as well, but believing the exact same thing that I pointed out with Leo. Like, she herself is like someone better than I just broke.
Yeah.
I just followed up a potential affair story.
Yeah.
And I didn't figure this out.
Yeah.
I
do like that she doesn't want it, but obviously, like, the high school student is just like, yeah, I want to fucking live.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to live and I want to bone my girlfriend.
Speaking of Leo, he bicycles over to his girlfriend's house, briefly chats with her dad as he's locking up a dirt bike, then goes up on to a hill to talk to her. He proposes to her, saying that if we got married, she would count as family, and both her and her parents will be able to survive in the caves as well.
Well, he said that he had talked to civil defense.
Yeah, that was it.
And that they had said, yes, that is okay.
Yeah. This is the only montage we get in the movie. Sad music where we see the Earth and its people getting very pissed off, and how other countries are handling this. We don't see anything outside the US. It's just Moscow as things are going to shit in Moscow, and that's it.
And it's newsreel and stuff. I wish they had I wish they had room in the movie to do more with that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, where the movie was going, I get it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there's, like, rioting, looters, stuff like that. Yeah. You know?
The two kids get married during this montage, and we see Jenny's mom getting all dressed up, acting nostalgic, and preparing to off herself.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. There's now another time skip. There's now less than
time
two
scump?
Times.
I'm trying not to point out every time you misspeak, but time scump sounds like a new kind of, I don't know.
Oh, it's a it's
math.
A
it's a math core band.
That's actually pretty good. Another time skip. There's a little less than 2 weeks till impact, and aboard the spaceship, the old astronaut has a cute bonding moment with the blind pilot. Chat is about him. They talk about family, and the veteran tells him that he says, hey, so I used some of the space in my kit to bring actual books along if you want to. And the,
yeah.
And the astronaut basically says, I might not be able to see, but I'm not blind. I just can still see some bits and pieces of light, and I don't think I can read. And they
have this nice bonding moment about family and how Robert Duvall's character like lost his wife, and marriages have their ups and downs, but they ended on a high note.
Yeah.
Before she passed, and it's a cute moment.
It is, and when they reach,
I love Robert Duvall in everything.
Yeah, when they reach the natural end of the conversation, Duvall just picks up Moby Dick and starts reading it to him, and I thought that was so cute.
It is very cute. It's too bad that we have a very bad relationship with Moby Dick.
Earthside, the military are picking up people who have been chosen for the caves. They pick up Leona's family. And his new wife's parents aren't on the list. She initially doesn't want to go without her parents, but both of them are like, get on the bus, get on the bus, you'll live. She resists, and the army guys decide, okay, screw it, we have to keep schedule. Mm-hmm. We move out without her. Leo's family is on, her family is off, and she immediately regrets not getting on the bus because she chases after the bus. At the station, Jenny gets a phone call informing her that her mother has taken her own life after collecting her mother's things.
I like that it's never explicitly
it's again little acting. Like she gets the phone call
and
acting
and the like intent being shown to us during the montage.
Yes,
it's like, this is like the one 90s movie that actually does show don't tell.
Yeah, it's so
and
good.
I don't understand why, like, it's making me question why all other 90s movies were so shit at that.
She picks up the phone. We don't hear the other side. We only hear her, and we only see her get, like, kind of break inside.
Great little acting moment.
Yeah. So she goes to the coroner, gets her mother's things. She sees her dad outside in the, it's pouring rain. He tells her that his new wife left him to go be with her mother, and he doesn't want to be alone right now. Still very bitter at her father for many reasons, Jenny tells him, well, at least now you know how it feels to be left alone. And she gets in a car and leaves.
She also says that she feels like an orphan.
Yes.
Which is a line that made me stop and ponder whether or not she was allowed to feel like that. Or whether, I'm like, okay, she's not an orphan because she's an adult. But, and also one of her parents is technically still alive. Just,
well, no, like, she was left by her.
But, right, yeah. Right. So, it literally sent me into, like, this internal debate with myself whether this was valid.
I like it.
I like it too. But it literally was like, wait. Like, it
does
made me stop
this,
and
does
think.
This work?
Yeah. It's like, yeah. Metaphorically, yes.
Yeah.
Literally, no. But it sent me into that for a little bit. And I always like it when a line in a movie does that.
Yeah. With 5 days left to impact, another time skip, the comet can be seen
during
the daytime.
At least it was only 2 weeks this time.
Yeah. Comet can be seen during the daytime. Buses are bringing people into the Life's Home caves, and it's only at this point of about to go into the cave that Leo decides, I'm going to go all the way from Missouri back to Sarah. I don't know where they lived.
Yeah, I don't think... I think it was stated at one point...
Midwest?
Like, during the first press conference.
Yeah.
Because when the president said, a student and his teacher from yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
Well, I cannot for the life of me remember where he was from.
Something wants me to say, I feel like it's Midwest.
I mean, it definitely had that vibe to it.
His parents don't really put up much of a fight about this decision. Like, the father gives him his gold watch, says use it to trade. And I'm not a parent, but if I was, I would Vulcan death grip my child and make sure that they lived inside of a cave after, instead of going after their girlfriend only to die. Yeah, no, okay, I know. I make that change. I noticed that, like, as I was doing that, I'm going to keep calling them boyfriend and girlfriend because they are both literal fucking teenagers.
Yeah, no, I know.
It's just like,
here's the thing. Yeah, I don't know.
He was the actor was 17.
Yeah, the actor was 17, but there's like a 2-year time skip during this.
Yeah,
movie.
Okay, fine. But at the same time, it's just like, I don't. Also, no one ages.
No.
No.
Some babies are born.
But it's just like, what? You are, okay, if you have a kid, you think you're going to let them go save their loved one instead of going into this hole to be alive?
Is it my only kid?
I don't think that would matter. I'm surprised that I have to answer that.
Well, I'm just saying, let's say it was my cats.
Okay.
If Echo and Percy... if I was bringing them to safety and Percy was like, no, I want to go over here because there's something shiny, I'd be like, I'd stop and think about letting him for a minute.
For a second.
For a minute.
You see an asteroid coming in from the sky, and this is an asteroid in this scenario because I'm sick of saying comet, and you're running into a shelter carrying two cats. Percy jumps out and goes, meow, I don't want to go inside, and you're like, no, you're going to get the fuck inside and live.
I'd be sad about it afterwards, but as long as I have Echo... Hey, I tell Percy to his face all the time, if he wasn't so cute, he'd be an only... His brother would be an only child.
But he is cute, so you drag that cat into the shelter. All right.
I'm fully just...
I know that you're messing with me.
But...
Yeah.
No, I don't know about, like, Vulcan death-gripping the kid, but... Like, be like...
Depends on how much of a fight they were putting up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jenny's father finds her at work and wants to show her that she's not an orphan. He shows her a couple of pictures that her mother took of her and her dad when she was 5, trying to remind her that at one point in time he was in love with his wife. He leaves and she smiles. She's very dismissive of him during this entire thing, but she's like, she does obviously feel some connection. Hitching a ride in the back of a truck with a bunch of migrant workers, Leo is listening to the radio announce that the nukes have been launched and are going to hit the comet within 20 minutes. None of them call them nukes. They are all called Titan missiles, but it's heavily implied.
Yeah.
I wonder why the nuclear device wasn't invoked. Like, it was invoked once on the spaceship, but never on Earth.
Yeah, I don't know.
Hmm.
Make it seem like we didn't have nukes.
Yeah, maybe. Morgan Freeman looks sad in the Oval Office and announces that the nukes haven't made a dent and the comet is heading on a direct collision course with Earth.
See, so when I first watched that part, I'm like, okay, so he's recording two messages.
That's what I thought too.
Where it didn't. But no, it's just, okay, this is the one thing that it doesn't do the show, don't tell. It actually tells you what happened. We don't see anything, which is a little...
I think they blew their special effects budget on the final impact.
Oh, 100%, and fine with that, because I do love the visuals that we end up getting later.
Yeah.
But still, it would have been nice to have...
Like, even a simulation?
Right, even one of the computer simulations like they were doing before.
Yeah.
Instead we get nothing. Granted, we get another amazing speech from Morgan Freeman, yeah. So I can't complain too much, but
yeah.
If I'm looking at it from just the movie-making perspective, it leaves something to be desired there. Mm.
The first smaller comet...
It seems a little abrupt.
A little bit, yeah. The first smaller comet will hit the Atlantic Ocean somewhere off the eastern seaboard of the U.S., cause a giant tidal wave, and then the big one will hit in western Canada and kill everyone. There are now less than...
At least nobody's in Western Canada.
I was going to make that joke too, god damn it. I was just like, is that poor taste? If it comes up in the thing, I'll let it. But it's like, you're right. Like, it's... There's, what is there? There's Vancouver, and that's it.
Yeah. Nobody lives in British Columbia. That's why it's still British.
Shut the fuck up.
I'm fully just kidding to any of our Canadian listeners. The joke was set up too perfectly.
Love you, Canada. Especially the western parts.
Hey, how you doing? Western Canada.
There are now less than 12 hours till impact. Aboard the spaceship, the old astronaut sees that the hole they left from the first nuke has been dug out even further by ice melting from the sun. He surmises that if they can get the remaining 4 nuclear devices in the hole, it will blow up the entire comet into tiny little pieces. Then...
Oh, good. We don't have many listeners in Canada.
Oh, good. Okay. It will blow up the entire comet. They realize that they can get in there, but they won't have enough gas to get back out and safely return to Earth, so suicide mission. Being professionals, none of them have any doubts about this, and one of the astronauts points out, hey, on the bright side, we'll all have high schools named after us.
Yeah.
And I like that. That was just like...
There are a lot of little lines in this movie that are just nice little touches.
Yeah. Like, she's trying to shift the feeling in the room of, we're going to go on a suicide mission. And she tries, and, like, from the look on her face, she's like, no, that's not going to help.
Yeah. But she still delivers the line, is it, like, optimistically. And it's just, it's nice.
Yeah. The army prepares to move Jenny to the caves, but they have some extra room on the helicopter and will bring some of her colleagues to higher ground. At the same time, Leo gets back to his wife's house. It, again, feels really weird saying that. Boyfriend, girlfriend.
His child wife. His child bride.
The child finds his child bride. Oh, God.
Ugh. Ugh. Frodo. Frodo finds his future Frodo.
Finds his child bride. Okay. He gets back to the house, finds that they're gone. He takes his father-in-law's dirt bike and heads to the highway, which is currently jammed absolutely full with people trying to escape the coast. Jenny decides to give up her seat to a colleague who has a toddler with her and says, I'm giving you the spot in the caves.
Well, after literally just grabbing her daughter and running to the helicopter. By the way, there's a cute little when they're all drawing sticks to see who goes, and the daughter pulls one.
Oh, that was...
I got a stick.
Yeah,
and I don't know what that's the kind of thing that in most movies you would just fully cut out. Because like, why?
But it's just
But it's so fucking cute.
Yeah, and the way she like holds the stick and like the
it's the one time in this movie that like emotional tension is kind of
reduced.
Yeah,
but it's just like it's still sad in a and it also increases it in a different way.
Yeah,
it's very well done.
It's layered.
Yeah. So she says
something that most 90s movies aren't.
Jenny gives up her seat to the colleague and the toddler. She looks at the pictures of her and her dad. Leo continues biking down the highway looking for his girlfriend. He passes her parents in their car and she sees him. Her parents immediately get out, shove her onto the bike, hand her her baby brother and says, you need to get to safety. Get the hell out of here. Get to higher ground. Live for fuck's sake. And
see, these parents have good motivations. It's like, hey, at least we can save our children.
Yeah.
Where the other parents were just like, yeah, no, get yourself killed. We're going to be fine.
Yeah. And it was just like, And they say goodbye to their daughter. They drive off, and there's this moment where, for both of them, but for both of the girlfriend's parents, where they're like, they'll live. They both break down in tears, and it's this beautiful moment.
So many of them.
Yeah.
Like that are starting to come up, like, yeah, right now.
Right now. We're at the end of the movie.
For about the next... I don't know.
Until the president's speech.
Until the president's speech, I basically just had tears running down my face. I was so happy that I decided to shower after the movie because I needed just a fucking cold shower after this. I was literally, like, it wasn't just like a couple tears welling up. I'm like no, ugly full crying. On, like, not ugly crying. Okay. I was not bawling or anything like that. But I was at the point where I was like, I could do with a box of tissues, but I also, like, it's not completely necessary.
I can,
like,
just cry into my cat.
Exactly. I am very sorry, Echo.
Jenny goes to the beach house from the photos and finds her dad there. She just goes up to him. They don't say anything, except she goes up to him and says, "When I was 11, I took $32 from your wallet." And he looks out at the sea and looks at her and says, "When you were a baby, I accidentally dropped you on your head." And it's just a really sweet scene together.
Real quick, talking about crying into my cat, I'm about to show you, Gage, a picture of Echo basically the entire time I was watching this movie.
Okay. I'll post this in the Instagram feed.
Yeah, post this when the episode goes out.
Oh my god, that's...
I'll share this as soon as we finish recording.
Father and daughter have a very sweet scene together. They hug each other on the beach. The first meteorite comet...
Beep!
Shut up. breaks atmosphere, comes hurtling into the Atlantic Ocean. Best shot, in my opinion, has the comet flying over the beach and the Atlantic Ocean.
Yeah.
And, like, it cuts in the shockwave of it just passing by cuts into both the beach and the ocean in just a really good way.
Well, I love that once this happens and the actual, like, the tidal surge just fully...
Oh, yeah.
It's a 90s movie and they got the tides receding... Like, that quickly.
Yeah.
And, like, they got water down pretty fucking good for 1998, 1997, whenever it was actually made.
Yeah.
Like, they fucking nailed it.
Yeah, the tides get sucked back. Visual effects are so freaking good. Wave just kind of... The wave hits New York, and it just kind of... It just kind of envelops the Statue of Liberty, and then it just hits New York and just keeps going...
That is where I have one slight issue, where it kind of just looks like it's a single solid object.
Yeah.
Some water texture laid over it. That's like just kind of like barreling through instead of crashing. But at
like
the same
theoretically
time,
water going at subsonic speeds.
Yeah. So I like, that's the thing. I'm like willing to forgive it that just saying that's the one thing that to my eye looks off.
To my eye looked off was the fact that it hits New York and the World Trade Center doesn't move.
We'll talk about this later.
This has heavy implication for just like, I never, like, you, but I barely remember 9/11. You're 2 years younger than me.
I do remember it for a very specific reason. We're just going to do this now.
Yeah, okay, fine.
I remember it for a very specific reason. I remember being like, oh, cool. We got half a day off of school. Going home. And then that night, mom and dad were watching news coverage of it.
Mm-hmm.
But as a, let's see, that was 2001. I was almost 5.
Okay.
Because I was born in November of 96. Mm-hmm. This was September of 01.
Mm-hmm.
I was 4, almost 5.
Mm-hmm.
And to a 4-year-old's mind, you walk in and see, like, burning, destroyed towers collapsing in the middle of New York, and I walked up to my parents. I'm like, "What movie are you watching?"
Oh, geez.
And then I remember vividly walking up and just looking. I'm like, "This looks like a cool movie." And mom and dad were like, "In the childhood innocence, like, there's only so much you can say to a kid about it."
Yeah,
but
for me, like, I don't remember the event, but I remember how adults acted.
Yeah.
After, like,
and again, I remember, like, that. I remember seeing the news footage.
When I was a kid, we never had the TV on. We had the TV on for like 2 hours. Me and my sister would get 2 hours of TV time during the weekdays and then a little bit more on weekends. But then suddenly the news was on 24/7. Everyone was all the adults were. Well, that's right.
Because you're the oldest and then your sister's younger than you.
Yeah.
So I had a brother and sister. My brother's 11 years older than me. My sister is 8 years older than me. TV was on all of the fucking time.
Okay.
Except when they were at their dad's house. On the weekends or every other weekend or whatever it was, then it was mostly either me or my parents watching football or something like that. So there was always a TV on. Mm. So I walk into the room and I see a news footage of this happening. I assume it's a movie.
Mm.
It's like 7 at night. It's kind
of, yeah, no, I get that. Yeah, no, that's wild.
Yeah.
But obviously, like, both of us, like, we grew up post 9/11.
Yeah,
it's hard to imagine the world before for us. Like, I run out. Yeah. Like, I can't. 90s for me has nothing to do with economics. It only has to do with playing softball in the street. Like, yeah, that's
for me. It mostly has to do with
we did play baseball, but after we broke a window, it was softball.
Yeah. Softballs are still very hard.
Yes. Yes. But they didn't yell at us.
It's not an accurate name.
Yeah. Anyway, no, so going back to the movie,
yeah,
like, the Twin Towers are still standing, but they're leaning on each other.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, this is the mindset of how indestructible America was at that time.
It's
that they can't even comprehend
that the towers can fall,
yeah,
and that jet fuel can melt steel beams. No,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Sorry, getting
it's weird. I think that glass, that's a thing of gin that I had last time, is still working its way through my system.
It was a very big cup.
I've been bone dry this entire episode.
So waves also. Father and daughter, they get taken out by the waves. I love that scene.
Because here's the thing, too, is that it looks like the wave actually, like, kind of, like, breaks around them and then envelops them.
Yeah.
Like, inaccurate to how it would actually work, but at the same time, it makes for an amazing visual and, like,
yeah,
symbolic moment for the two of them.
Like
they're literally embracing each other.
Yeah, as like, their emotional weight was heavy enough to make an impact on this wave.
I know, and it's this little thing that the, physics and engineer side of my brain wants to go, no, but the emotional, happy parts of my brain wants to go, yay!
So we then cut to Leo and his girlfriend,
the child bride,
still not calling the wife, and stop that. They're driving up to high ground and they start running when they can't go any further up in
casually climbing a mountain.
Yep. Up in space, the spaceship is on a collision course with the asteroid to get collision course with the comet to get into the hole. The astronauts.
So, did we talk about their plan?
I think so, yeah.
We did. Yeah. Sorry, the talk of 9/11 just completely threw me off.
Yeah, no, it was. Yeah. I just the fact that the towers were still standing was an interesting enough topic to go off. So, the astronauts contact NASA to say their last goodbyes to their families. And the blind pilot has to pretend to see his new baby boy as he says goodbye. And that's when I was trying to keep my composure. I was being like, yeah, okay, I see the emotional heartstrings.
Do you want to know when I fucking broke? It was when, Blair Underwood, the actor, who plays, what was his name? Mark Simon, who earlier in the movie was talking to his fiance and was like, look, I want to get married.
Oh.
I ain't doing it in a church. I don't do church as well.
Yeah.
And he's literally like, you keep doing your church thing. Because I'm going to be right there with you, haunting you. And I fucking lost it.
And she's like, you better haunt me.
Yeah. And I fucking broke. And then immediately after this, like all of the other things, I loved. Hey, Fish, we couldn't get your sons. They're on active duty. And they weren't able to make it. And he's like, all right, well, you tell my wife I'm going to see her soon. Like, well, obviously talking. Like,
yeah.
Like, hey, I'm going to see you soon, honey. Like, because his yeah. birthday. And I'm like, fucking hell. Why does this movie have to break me so hard over its goddamn...
It goes so hard in the end.
This movie, emotionally, like, Bane, Batman, backbreak. Just, that's what it did to my emotions.
You are now feeling your feelings.
Yeah. You... You merely adapted to the sadness. I was born in it. I... Bravo movie? Yeah. Well, fuck you.
Yeah.
I'm like, Gage said that this is going to make me feel things. I'm not going to feel things.
That's
I feel things. I don't need it. I need it. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry. Anyway. It always comes back to SpongeBob.
Yeah. That's just you. Spaceship flies into the heart of the crater, detonates all nuclear devices, shattering the comet into a million billion pieces, and Leo and his wife look up in amazement as the water in the valley starts to recede.
Hey, you said it without cringing.
Yeah. That's because I'm trying to add weight to a really emotional moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. The president then cuts to the president giving probably the worst speech in this movie.
I liked it.
It was
It's the only speech in this movie that I actually felt like a real president would give.
Yeah, which is why I didn't like it.
I liked it because it added, like, okay, shit's over, it's time to get to work.
Yeah.
Like, it felt real.
Yeah.
I don't know. I agree with you. Like, I'm not a fan of this. It is the worst speech he gives. I still like it. Mm. I think that it has the right tone shift.
Yeah,
I think so. Because it very much feels like an Obama... era.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Of just like a, look, shit happened, we survived, we made it through, the waves receded,
as
a line that he repeats in his speech, and now it's time for us to rebuild.
Yeah.
As the camera pans back, and we see the, half-destroyed remnants of the Capitol building.
Yeah, currently under construction.
Yeah.
And
just throngs
of
people, cheering that, like, you know, the day was saved.
Yeah.
The government was transparent and it actually helped.
And then it cuts the credits.
Yeah.
And it was a good movie.
So, a little bit of a dichotomy between last week with Wakanda Forever and this week with Deep Impact.
Uh-huh.
And I am only bringing this up because Wakanda Forever, I really, really, really wanted to love and ended up just thinking that it was good.
Mm-hmm.
With this one, I'm actively trying to not like it. Because as far as movie goes, I think it's very fine.
Yes.
But there's the character-driven moments in this movie hit so fucking hard that I cannot dislike it.
Yeah. No, it's
just like, I was feeling that while I was finishing watching the movie. I'm like, this is exactly the opposite from last week.
Yeah. Different director, different act, like different single actor. This might have not been as good as it is. But
I will say, the Leo and Sarah stuff is the weakest link as far as emotional payoff. They feel like they have the least to do in the movie.
We also didn't see any of their on-screen chemistry together.
So initially there was a bit more of them, but initial screen tests had audience not like it.
Okay.
And so they removed a lot of their time together.
Okay.
And I don't know where that time ended up going or if the movie was initially supposed to be longer and they just cut it down.
Yeah.
But I think it would have helped to see them actually have chemistry instead of it. The entire time they feel like pseudo platonic, like girl next door who neither wants to admit their feelings for the other yet.
Yeah.
That's their vibe throughout this entire thing.
Yeah.
To me. Like, they don't feel like they actually are in love.
Right. It feels like, I mean, I get, like, that makes that their entire dynamic feels very much like teenagers who don't exactly know what they're doing. They're just doing things because that's what everyone else does.
Yeah, but I feel like late high school teenagers act at least a little bit more realistic than what this is. This felt more middle school.
Yeah, no, that's what I meant. Like that, I didn't even realize that these were high schoolers.
Yeah, no, they were. Yeah. They were high schoolers.
Okay. Yeah. Also, okay, as far as like the technology goes, not the design, but like if you blow up a comet that's only a few hours from hitting Earth, this is just a little pet peeve of mine. Millions of pieces scattered across the globe would absolutely heat the atmosphere and probably lead to some short to mid-length negative effects on the planet.
Probably. Mm. The thing is, the movie doesn't extend long enough for them to get into
it. Yeah, and that's typical of most 90s movies.
Yeah.
Like, we made it through. Don't worry about the long-term
But that's
outcomes.
The thing. A lot of these 90s movies basically have no falling action whatsoever.
Yeah.
It's just building, 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 climax, the end.
Yeah. Like, the falling...
It feels... basically, every 90s movie kind of is a Michael Bay movie.
I don't disagree.
Sorry,
but I don't.
I meant it the other way. Every Michael Bay movie is a 90s movie.
Okay, there we go. That I agree with.
Sorry. I said it backwards and I realized it while you were humming. But, no. Every Michael Bay movie is a 90s movie because there's no falling action.
Yeah.
It's just climax and how do we end this as quickly as possible because I don't give a shit anymore.
Right.
It's literally like I blew my load. Now I gotta go piss.
Yeah. It's. This movie's good. It's really all the character interaction, everything.
It's good in spite of the plot.
Yes.
Though.
Yeah, which is very impressive.
Which usually I feel like it's the other way around. Like the plot's very good, but other things are lacking.
Yeah.
You don't usually see like plot being lackluster and then like the emotional moments just fucking hit hard.
Right.
Yeah. I'm very pleasantly surprised with this movie.
I tried a long time to figure out how to... Well, let's get to the rating after we do the accolades.
Yeah. Favorite shot?
I think it's the meteor passing over the beach and the ocean.
Okay.
I think that CGI scene was just done very well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, favorite shot and favorite scene are definitely going to be in the back half of the movie.
So... I have two favorite shots.
Okay.
That I cannot decide which I like more.
Mm.
One of them is actually earlier on in the movie.
Okay.
It's when the astronauts first step onto the comet.
Okay. I love
the visuals of the coma, like,
yeah.
Like kind of in both the foreground and the background, the way that they did that, the mm-hmm. look of the actual like rock itself. It's not like amazing camera work or anything, but I love the visual of it so much that mm-hmm. I have to give that at least tied with when the tides were receding.
Right. Yeah.
Because it just, that little attention to detail.
Just like of the water getting like sucked in yeah. as fast as the water was coming.
Yeah. It's this little attention to detail that just pushes it over the edge for me. Those two are tied for me.
Yeah.
I do really like the meteor ding. comet.
It's hard, right? It sucks. It is.
I do really like the look of it over the beach, but no, it's either the tides or the first time that they step foot onto the Wolf Biederman.
I think for my favorite scene is the escape from the comet after they put the bomb in.
Okay.
I think that scene where it's, we gotta go, the sun is out, like, all of the little details of the damage, like, you see one of the guys, when he gets onto the ship and as they take off, he slams his right arm into the wall, and he has a brace on later. Like, there is no such thing as wasted space in this movie.
No.
And I think that escape from the surface as it's starting to heat up really personifies that.
damn, you're making me kind of rethink the one that I had. Granted, yeah. I am going to do a different one than you because okay. Like, that's an amazing scene.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely love it. It's probably, if I wasn't going for an like emotional payoff scene,
mm-hmm.
that would probably be it. If this was like pure action movie, or at least like pure like suspense movie mm-hmm. without the character drama to it,
yeah,
that would probably be it.
Mm-hmm.
I have to go with the astronauts saying goodbye to their families. God,
it's so I'm tearing up thinking about it,
dude. God. It's taking all of me to hold back tears.
God, the fat, like the little, like I was like holding myself as well as possible. Like, okay, this I was clearly a little bit drunk the first time I watched this in the at the hotel. But then the guy leans over to the blind father and says, he has a little rocket. And he says, and the father's just like,
that's a really powerful rocket, bud. Fuck. It's just like, he laughed. I know I hurt.
It's so cute. It's so well done. Yeah, no, that's a good one.
I have to go with that.
Yeah.
It's like the heart of this movie.
Yeah. I think the hardest one to pin down a single name will be
standout performance.
Standout performance.
I do have one because I've been thinking about it for the past few hours.
Okay,
I'm gonna go with Robert Duvall.
He's very good in this.
Like, I want to give it to Morgan Freeman.
Same,
but I try to pick somebody a little bit less.
In the center of the
yeah, because I mean, obviously Morgan Freeman is also like, if he was in every movie, I'd always put him as a runner up.
Yeah,
no, for standout performance just, anyway, yeah. Because he's always that good.
I'm pretty sure we gave him a standout for Oblivion, even though he was behind those giant glasses.
Yeah, but that's because he was behind those glasses and still was able to act that well. And also, everybody else in that movie was just fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, no, I think I have to agree with you.
Robert Duvall just, he like, everybody in this movie is acts very well.
Good. Yes.
I mean, even Elijah Wood and Sarah. Thank you. I stopped
anything
myself.
To stop you from saying child bride one more time. God damn it.
No, but, like, everybody has great performances in this movie, mm-hmm. but there's something about Robert Duvall's just happy grandpa vibe.
He has the dignity of the 1960s astronaut mixed with like proud, like his entire character is perfect.
But
and the way he plays it is perfect.
He's the boomer that other boomers aspire to be.
I mean, if you land on the moon, you're gonna be a good person.
Yeah, but like he's humble.
Yes,
is the thing. And what really made me think and stop and think and actually give this to him
mm-hmm.
was the scene with him talking about how his wife died and then starting to read Moby Dick.
Yeah, no, like, that was just... This,
and also, in the bar earlier when he walks up and he's like, I know you
scene.
Guys don't want me here. What can I do to show you guys that I belong here too?
Yeah.
And it's just like... He's not coming over just like, hey, I fucking belong here. I earned my place.
Yeah.
I walked on the fucking moon. He's like, hey, how can I interact with you guys to make you understand that that having me around will be beneficial?
I think this line was somewhere similar to, you guys don't care about me. I'm old news. But if you asked your parents what they thought about me, they'd tell you. But I don't want them talking down to you about me.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's just that's, like...
That's what I'm saying. He's humble. Yeah. It's the humility of him. And I love everything about his character, everything about the way that he portrayed him. I love Robert Duvall anyway.
Yes.
Do we have The Judge on our list?
The Judge is on our list.
Is that one that we're doing with Zeev?
I'm not sure.
Because it's a drama, and that's like the one drama movie that I want to do.
We'll ask him when he comes over.
Yeah, he's coming over in literally like 40 minutes.
Yeah. Dungeons and Dragons, we will not be rolling, we will not be derailing the campaign.
I'm going to throw something at your
please
head.
Please don't.
No, it's not a pen.
Please don't. Closest thing to him is the remote, which is about the size of...
It's about the size of three pens.
Yeah.
Robert Duvall.
Yeah, Robert Duvall. Very good.
I don't have anything for a wrecking ball this week.
What have I been doing? I've been doing art.
Yeah, yeah, you've been, doing a lot of art. We cannot disclose exactly what has been happening yet, but
I guess I might as well recommend the application I've been using.
Yeah,
I've been using a website called Night Cafe. It's a computer. It's text to image.
It's like an AI art generator.
AI art generator. There's been some, admittedly, valid criticism of the use of AI art, and mostly it's from assholes who make an AI art piece and then send it to a contest and win and then say, haha, fuck you nerds, I did this by typing.
But the thing is, like, you even explained it to me, like, you had a discussion with your dad because you were sure.
Yeah, it's an interesting period. After a discussion with my dad and a little chat with my sister, if you look at it as a tool to learn from, I'm terrible with faces. Light hitting skin is very difficult, but this can do faces very well.
Specular highlights, even like art, like special effects for movies,
yes,
video games. It's literally, it's make or break if something looks good.
Right.
With faces and skin.
Yeah, so this is a great jumping off point. Using Night Cafe has been a great jumping off point for me in digital art. Learning by playing around with it.
Mm-hmm.
I've also been able to get some very cool images for things that we'll be doing in the future.
And it's like, the way that you described it to me was basically like, it's another brush.
Yes.
To use on the canvas.
It's just another tool, and it's mostly free. You can get free credits just by logging in every day, or you can pay a monthly subscription to get
we're
some.
We're not advertising for them or anything. No. It's a program that Gage has been using.
I've been using it. I've been loving it. If you want to see some of my work, I've been posting it to Instagram under finite_infinity_nightcafe, all one word.
Cool.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, eventually we will have some art to share with you guys.
Yes.
But until then, thank you guys so much for listening. We really appreciate it. Next week, we have the finale to 90s disaster movies,
yes,
November. And we're actually finishing a month in that month.
We're going to try to do this.
This is a 5-week month, though, I think.
Yeah, we got lucky with November.
No, it's not.
No? Will the new one be coming out in December?
No, the new one's... Yeah, the new one, the last one's coming out on the 2nd.
Okay.
Close a fucking enough.
Close enough.
We're recording it in November.
Yeah.
But we have Dante's Peak.
Which,
the volcano movie that should hopefully redeem volcano movies.
I hope so. You've been amping it up more than I've been amping up Volcano. But that being said, Volcano was not very good to begin with, so we'll see where we're at.
And you have to remember, I've been amping it up, even though the only time that I've seen it was in high school earth science in 9th grade. It's literally been over 10 years since I've seen it. We will see if it holds up to my memory.
Well, at least it gets the geologist teacher seal of approval.
Well, to be fair, he was high like 90% of the time, so.
So maybe not. All right. This has been Chilling Amongst the Mangos.
If you guys would like to follow us on Instagram, links will be down in the description below for that. You can join our Discord, come and chat with us, hang out, and on also our website, links will be down in the description below for that as well. Mm-hmm. There you can find links to all of our other episodes and stuff like that. If you want to find a couple, share them with friends, help us grow, we'd really appreciate it. Also, leave us some written reviews and 5 stars wherever you listen to your podcast. Would really help us out.
Very much.
Thank you guys so much. We will be back next week with
Dante's Peak.
Yes.
Yeah. What did you whisper?
The end.
That's not the end.
of 90s Disaster in November.
Yes, but it, like, if we're coming back next week.
Shit, how would you eat this?
Oh my god.
No, we're doing it at the end. We're doing it at the end.
Okay. This is a tricky one. It's just good. Okay, you know what this is? This is a blueberry comet flying directly from the depths of outer space straight into my heart. Let me take that again. Shut the fuck up.
No, you don't get to take it again.
God damn it.
This to me.
Heart, not art. Though both are very close to each other.
For you. Mm. For me, this is also a blueberry comet, mm-hmm. but is being held up by a bunch of different amazing actors and characters like Atlas holding up the world.
Mm. Okay. I like that.
Fuck, I can't believe we almost forgot to do that.
We skipped it. We were so in the zone.
Wow, we suck. It's almost like we haven't been doing this for a year.